Gemorigitten and Daf Samach regarding the relationship between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebalpeh. Is the majority, if you'll take a bookcase, if you take a library, should we assume that the majority of the Torah is Bichsav, or the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebalpeh? The dispute was triggered off based on a pasuk in Novi, where the Novi says something about Echtabel Rubei Tarosi. Should I have written down the majority of the Torah? So the Amoraim, the rabbis of the Talmud, had a dispute regarding the relationship between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh, which is in the majority. Anyone who walks into any library will know right away how many books are there in the Tanakh, 24. How many books are there in the Torah Shebalpeh? Endless. They keep on, every year someone puts, there are hundreds of books put out every year on Torah Shebalpeh. So how can anyone in his right mind possibly think that the relationship between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebalpeh is such that the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebichsav? The Torah Shebalpeh keeps on expanding. It's clearly much greater. It's clearly the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebalpeh. So the commentaries discuss this. There is a Sefer on Gemara that's not used so often today. It was written in the 1600s. That's called the Be'er Sheva. And the Sefer Be'er Sheva, he suggests that there are different parts to the Torah Shebalpeh, as we will get into discussion, and the various, I'll mention it now. Every time I started preparing these talks, I started from a different end. You don't know where to begin when you're discussing the development of the Torah Shebalpeh. If you have a standard edition of the Gemara, in the Gemara Brachos, in the end of the Gemara Brachos, if you'll take a look, those who are interested in checking this, if you take a look, it's on in the commentary of the Rambam. The Rambam has a commentary on the Mishnayos, and before he begins his commentary, he has a Hakdama. It's a famous Hakdama. It's really an introduction to all of Torah Shebalpeh. So on page Nun Dalid, on the second column, he gives you the five sections of the Torah Shebalpeh. So this Sefer Be'er Sheva points out that apparently, if you study Talmud, you'll come to the realization that the bulk of all of the Torah is really found in what the Rambam calls the Chelek HaShlishi, the third area of the Torah Shebalpeh. The Rambam has, just to run through briefly, the Chelek HaRishon of, you have the Torah Shebichsav that consists of the 24 Svarim, the Kisvei HaKadosh, Bereishis, through Dvarim, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, that's 24 Svarim. And then you have, within the Torah Shebalpeh, there are different sections. So one section of the Torah Shebalpeh, the Rambam refers to as the Pirushim HaMukubolim Lipi Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. And the Rambam gives you examples. For example, it says in the Chumash that if someone injures somebody else, Ayin Tachasayin. So this is not to be taken literally. What it means is that he pays the value of the eye, and how you estimate that is a whole discussion in the Talmud. So the Rambam says that this is called Pirushim HaMukubolim Mipi Moshe Rabbeinu. Or another example the Rambam gives, there are several examples. Another example is the pasuk that we spoke about over Sukkot, that we should shake the lulav and the esrog, and we should use a pre-eitz hadar, a good-looking fruit. So something that grows on a tree, good-looking. An esrog is not so appealing to me. Maybe I like apples better. Some people like oranges better. Whatever, pears. Why dafke and esrog? So the Rambam says this is one of the Pirushim HaMukubolim L'Moshe Rabbeinu, that phrase in the pasuk in Kumish, creates other, means an esrog. So this is one section. How many Pirushim HaMukubolim L'Moshe Rabbeinu are there? You can write them all down on one page. So that's not going to be the bulk of the Torah. The Torah Shebichsav, the 24 books of the Torah Shebichsav are much bigger than that. Then the Rambam has another section, Achelek HaSheni, another section of the Torah Shebalpeh is Halachas L'Moshe Misinai. We have oral traditions that have no source at all in the Chumash. It's just an oral tradition that's the din. For example, the halacha that the tefillin have to be square is not based on any pasuk, not based on any drasha. The Talmud says that this is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. This is an oral tradition. The halacha that the ritzuas of the tefillin have to be painted black is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Many dinim regarding a sukkah, that the sukkah can be so flimsy, you don't need four walls, and you don't need this, and you don't need so much over here, and so much over there. So the Talmud says that much of this is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. So the Rambam says again, he's going to give you a complete list. Here, this is on page Nun Dalit, on the second column, and he gives you the Chelek HaRishon, the Chelek HaSheni, the Chelek HaShlishi, the Chelek HaRavi, the Chelek HaChamishi, the five sections of the Torah Shebalpeh. If before he gets to that, on this column, on the first column, on page Nun Dalet, this is a footnote by somebody else, but this is the Rambam. So the Rambam gives you what he considers a complete list of all of the halachas l'moshe misina. So that's just on one column. He finished the whole list of halachas l'moshe misina. Just parenthetically, before we go any further, there is a famous sefer, Shailus HaTshuvos Chavos Yoyer. It was written by a great rabbi, Rabbi Yoyer Bachrach, in the 1700s. His mother's name was Chava. His mother passed away, so he called the sefer Chavos Yoyer. He is Chava's son, Yoyer. And out of memory for his mother. So he has a long essay where he disagrees with the Rambam. How can the Rambam say that he has given you the complete list of all of the halachas l'moshe misinai? It's twice as long, and he quotes one line from the Gemara, another line from the Gemara, another line from the Gemara. The Rambam forgot all of these Gemaras, and he poses this difficulty. So the Netziv is a Rashi Tevis that stands for Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. You may have heard of Rav Chaim Berlin, you may have heard of Rav Meir Bar Ilan. They were brothers. They were both sons of the Netziv, from two different wives. Rav Chaim Berlin was the son from the first wife. The Netziv married the granddaughter of Rav Chaim Balozhinov, who founded the Balozhin Yeshiva. Rav Chaim Balozhinov was a student of the Vilna Goyim, and he founded the yeshiva. He founded the first yeshiva in Lithuania that was known as the Balozhin Yeshiva. The Balozhin Yeshiva lasted for 90 years. The last 40 years in Balozhin, the yeshiva was run with an iron hand by the Netziv. He was the one under his chairmanship, under his leadership of the yeshiva, was the one who was very, very famous. That's when Bialik studied in the yeshiva, when they had all of the maskilim and all of the machlekes and everything, till finally the yeshiva was closed, I think in 1890 or 1891. Rav Chaim the Netziv himself closed the yeshiva because the Russian government insisted that they should have so much secular studies and they have to keep the Beis Medrash closed at night, and they would only permit them to study Torah 2 or 3 hours a day. So there was a big dispute among the rabbanim whether they should keep the yeshiva open, at least have the boys learn 3 hours a day. So what can we do? So they'll do everything else the rest of the day. At least they'll learn Torah 3 hours a day. Many rabbanim felt like that. And the minority of the rabbanim felt, no, that it's better to close the yeshiva. And the minority, the Chafetz Chaim, came to this meeting uninvited. And he expressed his opinion. And the Netziv felt that you have to close the yeshiva. He was the Rosh Yeshiva. And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who had married the granddaughter of the Netziv, also felt they should close the yeshiva. They were really in the minority. It was a big meeting of Rabbanim, and they decided they're going to close the yeshiva. Anyway, so the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, was married to the granddaughter of Rav Chaim Balozhin. Rav Chaim Balozhin, who founded the Balozhin Yeshiva, was a student of the Vilna Goyim. When he passed away, his son, Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Balozhin, took over the yeshiva. And after he passed away, his son-in-law took over, then another son-in-law. After he passed away, another son-in-law. And after he passed away, the youngest son-in-law of Rav Yitzchak Balozhin took over. That was the Netziv. So this Netziv, at a very young age, wrote a commentary on the Shiltas. The Shiltas is a sefer written by one of the great Talmidim, one of the great Rabbanim who lived in the period of the Gaonim. The Gaonim were right after the period of the Amoraim. Right after you have the Tanoim and the Amoraim, and a little after, there was a gap in between, and then you had the period of, you had the Rabbanim Savaroi, and after that you had the Gaonim. So this Rabbi Choy Goyin, apparently he wasn't a Goyin. Goyin doesn't mean a genius. In modern language, the word Goyin means a genius. Goyin in the days of the Gaonim men, the name of the yeshiva was Gaon Yankiv. So they were known as Rosh Yeshiva's Gaon Yankiv. He was the Rosh Yeshiva. Many of the Rosh Yeshivas were just fundraisers. So they were not known as the Talmid HaChacham. And some of the writings that we have from these Gaonim are ridiculous. So we just ignore them. What they wrote about Halacha, they're just wrong. And others of the famous Gaonim, Rav Shere Gaonim, Rav Hai Gaonim, Rav Amram Gaonim, some of the famous Gaonim were great. They were not only fundraisers. Maybe they had other people doing the fundraising. There were great Talmid HaChachamim whose words are learned today as well. So one of the great scholars who lived in that generation, who was not really a Goyin in the sense he wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva's Goyin Yankiv, he wasn't the president of the yeshiva, but he was a great Talmud Chacham. We call him a Goyin. We call him Rav Achoy Goyin. So he wrote what's called the Sefer She'iltis. The She'iltis is Drashas and Parshas HaShavua. Bereishis, Noyach, Lech Lecha. Every week he has 3 or 4 Drashas. 2 or 3 or 4 Drashas every week. And the Drashas are not sermons. The Drashas are... He starts off with a question. She'ilta means a question in Aramaic. Rabbi, what's the din regarding Shabbos? So he says, well, God created the world in 6 days and he rested on the seventh day, so you have to keep Shabbos. And then he runs into, he gives you a brief rundown of all of the dinim of Shabbos. It's usually easy dinim, but the reason why we still study the Shiltas today is because in the middle of it, like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it's pretty easy, but in the middle of his simple presentation, he'll always put in something that we never heard of before. Some statement that we don't know where it comes from. It's apparently his interpretation or a traditional interpretation of some passage in the Gemara. So for many years, this Shiltas was neglected. Nobody was studying the Shiltas. And over 100 years ago, about 130 years ago, they started all of a sudden to study the Shiltas. And two people who turned out later to be brothers-in-law both wrote commentaries on the Shiltas. One was Dinitzir, who wrote his commentary on the Shiltas when he was a teenager. 17 or 18 years old, he wrote a commentary. You can tell us that it's a rough style of Hebrew. His later writings are much more polished Hebrew, but he was a super genius. You can see from what he quoted at the age of 17 that he mastered all of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And his brother-in-law is the famous author of the Orach HaShulchan, Rabbi Chaim Michael Epstein, who wrote the Sefer Orach HaShulchan, a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, whose son later wrote the Torah Tamima, the commentary on Chumash. And it's interesting, just historically, his son, the one who wrote the Torah Tmima, Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein, whenever he refers to the Nitziv, the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, so he always refers to him as Dodi Gisi, my uncle, my brother-in-law. Because when he was a young boy, when Rabbi Baruch Epstein, the author of the Torah Tmima, was a young boy learning in Volozhin, so this man was his uncle. And later he became his brother-in-law. After the Nitziv's first wife passed away, because the Orach HaShulchan married the sister of the Nitziv. Mrs. Orach HaShulchan, Mrs. Epstein, her maiden name was Berlin. So she was the sister of the Nitziv. And after she passed away, they were looking for a shidduch for the Nitziv. And then it turned out, a very strange story, it's all written up. Rav Meir Bar Ilan wrote the whole story up in a book about his father, the Nitziv. It's called Rabban Shel Yisrael. It was printed by the Mizrahi in 1943 in America, I think. Very fascinating book, very fascinating reading. So he writes the whole story, why it turned out that his uncle married the niece, who was something like 35 or 40 years younger than him, and they had a happy marriage. Anyway, so getting back, this Nitziv, this Rosh Yeshiva from Volozhin, other people call him Rav Hershel Leib, because the name Tzvi, his name is Naftali Tzvi Yehuda. He had three first names, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, and the last name was Berlin. So some call him Hershel Leib because the name Tzvi is often translated into Yiddish as Hershel, as a deer, and the name Yehuda often goes together, Yehuda Leib. So that's how they call him, Rav Hershel Leib. So this Nitziv wrote the commentary on the Shiltas by this Rabbi Choy Goin, and it was printed in Europe in three volumes during his lifetime. The first volume is Bereishis Shmos, the next volume is Vayikra, the third volume is Bamidbar Dvarim. It's available in all the stores. At the time that he printed it, he wrote an introduction to the first volume, an introduction to the second volume, an introduction to the third volume. In Eretz Yisrael, when the Mossad Harav Kook reprinted the commentary of the Nitziv on the Shiltas, so they put all of the three introductions at the beginning of the first volume, because the second introduction is really a continuation of the first. He just picks up where he left off. And the third introduction is really a continuation of the second. So when you look in the book, when you look in the commentary of the Nitziv on the Shiltas, you wonder why in the world did the man write three introductions to the same book? So the answer is, if you read the footnote on the bottom of the page, the printers explain why. He really wrote them originally, each one as an introduction to each one of the three volumes, and then in Eretz Yisrael, one Mossad HaRav Kook reprinted it, so they put all the three introductions together. These introductions are not really an introduction to the Shiltas or to his commentary under the Shiltas. These are really introductions to the whole development of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And he has some very fascinating ideas, all based on quotations, citations from the Talmud, some of which we will be discussing in the course of our talks. So the Nitziv, in his introduction to the Shiltas, getting back to this, we pointed out that Rambam here, in one column, lists what he considers is the full listing of all of the halachas l'Moshe Mitzrayim. And in the Sefer Chavos Yoyer, by one of the Gedolim from the 1700s, he writes, that's not a complete listing, it's much longer, it's two or three times as long. How can the Rambam have left out so many other dinim that appear in the Gemara, famous dinim that we all know are halachas l'Moshe Mitzrayim? So the Nitziv, in his introduction, writes, if you look carefully in the Rambam and the Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, which is his Sefer Psak. like a Shulchan Aruch, something like a Shulchan Aruch. So in the Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam is very careful when he quotes a Gemara. He always tells you, is this a din min HaTorah? Is this a din min HaRabbanan? Is this a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai? So whenever the Gemara calls it halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, the Rambam will write, it's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Many times the Rambam will quote a din from the Gemara, which the Gemara describes as Hilchasa Gemiri Lo. Gemiri Lo means we have a tradition that that's the din. And Rashi and Tosfos in the Rush will always say that's the same thing. That phrase, that's a catchphrase. That phrase, Hilchasa Gemiri Lo, we have this halacha by tradition. Where did they get the tradition? Of course, from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. If otherwise, the Gemara would have worked out what the limud is. Which pasuk is it learned that from? It must be that it's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, which means that it's not based on any pasuk, just an oral tradition. So the Rambam will be very careful, the Nitziv points out. Whenever the Rambam will quote a din from the Gemara will not call it halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. The Gemara will say hilchasa gemiri lo, it's halacha that we have by tradition. The Rambam will not say halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. He will write mipi hashmua lamdu. Mipi hashmua lamdu. We have a tradition that this is the din. Why doesn't he write? He's translating literally hilchasa gemiri lo. We have a tradition that this is the din. Mipi hashmua lamdu. So the Netziv and Rav Hershelev in his introduction to the idea of the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh explains that the Rambam understood that phrase differently from Rashi and Tosfos. That's why the Rambam left out all of those Gemaras that the Chavis Yor asked about. He said those Gemaras, it never says that it's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. The Gemara says that those are hilchos of gemiri lo, which the Rambam understands to be something else. Namely, that at some time, some point in history, when the Talmud was written, this was several centuries after some of these dinim were developed. So they had a tradition that the din was XYZ, but they had forgotten the derivation. They knew it was based on a pasuk, they knew it was based on some kind of a drosha from a pasuk, but they had forgotten the derivation. So they just said, Hilchasa Gemiri Lo. The din was worked out a few centuries ago. We rely on the rabbis who worked it out, but we don't know how they worked it out. But it does mean that it's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. So that's why the Netziv says that the Rambam didn't make any mistake. When the Rambam gives you what he considers a complete list of the halachas l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, all right, he left out 5 or 10 or so, but he didn't leave out 100, because the other 90 or 95, the Gemara never said a halachas l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. The other cases, the Gemara said hilchaso gemiri lo, that they had a tradition that this was the din, and the Rambam understood that to mean that the din was worked out through the midrash haTorah nedreshes. So getting back again, the Rambam divides all of Torah Shebaal Peh into 5 sections. So we'll concentrate on the first 3. The first section, the Rambam says, you have Pirushim HaMekubalim L'Moshe Rabbeinu, L'Gayin Tachas Zayin, that it's not to be taken literally, that's a phrase that means you pay Mamon. Or you have the phrase that you have to take on Sukkot, the Pre-Eitz Hadar. We have a tradition that refers to Esrog, and there's no two ways about it. There's nothing to discuss. There's nothing to pilpul about. You can't come in a later generation and be mechadish otherwise. No, this is from the Pirusha Mahamakubalim L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Then the Rambam says the second area of Torah Shebaal Peh is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. So the Pirusha Mahamakubalim you can fit on one page, less than one page. The Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, the Rambam fit on one page. And if you follow the Chavis Yoras, it'll be on 3 pages. It's not in big letters, it'll be on 3 pages. It's not going to be so much. And then the third section of what the Rambam called the third area, the Chelek HaShlishi of the Torah Shebaal Peh, that's the bulk of all of the Torah Shebaal Peh, all of the dinim that were derived from the Torah Shebichsav based on the Midrash haTorah Nedreshes Peh. You know, when the Siddur, those who come early to Shul, right before Baruch Shama, you have one page that lists off, Rabbi Shmuel says that there were 13 Midrash haTorah Nedreshes Peh. There are 13 principles that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, the rules and the regulations, how to look at a pasuk, how to read in between the lines of the Chumash to derive new dinim. That's called Midos Shatarnid Rashistan. So Rabbi Shmuel, the passage that's quoted in the Siddur right before Baruch Shamar is in the name of Rabbi Shmuel. Not all the Tanoim agree to every single point there. The Talmud has a big discussion. Rabbi Akiva, who often disagreed with much of what Rabbi Shmuel had to say, disagreed about this also. Some of the points of Rabbi Shmuel. But the Talmud really points out, if you look in the Gemara in many different places, it really turns out that there are many more than 13 Midrash Shatarnid Rashistan. These are highlights. These are 13 of the many Midrash haTorah Nedreshes Peh. So getting back again, we mentioned there's a Torah Shebichsav and there's a Torah Shebaal Peh. The Talmud in Gittin Dav Samach has a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and his student Rabbi Elazar to Amoraim, who lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan was a student of Rabbi Yudah Nasi. That's the first generation of Amoraim. Rabbi Yudah Nasi was the last Tana, and his students were all the first generation of Amoraim. Rabbi Elazar was the second generation of Amoraim. He was a student of Rabbi Yochanan. So you have an argument between Rabbi Yochanan and his student Rabbi Elazar, whether the Rov based on a pasuk in Treyasa, whether the majority of the Torah is really Torah Shebichzav, or the Rov, the majority of the Torah, is Torah Shebal Peh. So we asked, the Be'er Sheba, the Sefer Be'er Sheba asks, if you go into any library, it will be obvious that the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebal Peh. The whole Torah Shebichzav only consists of 24 Svarim. Torah Shebal Peh has many more than 24 Svarim. On Ashir, it's limitless. It keeps on being developed every year. How can there be a question what the majority of the Torah is? Of course, the majority of the Torah, with your eyes closed, you can tell. The Rov of the Torah is Torah Shebal Peh. So in the Sefer Be'er Sheva, he explains that he thinks that the dispute in the Gemara between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar is they all agree that the first chelek, as the Rambam divides the Torah Shebal Peh into five sections, the first chelek, which is Pirushim HaMekubalim, is one page. The second chelek of Torah Shebal Peh, which is Halachos L'Moshe Misina, is either one page or four, or three pages. That's it. Very short. The third section of the Torah Shebal Peh, that's the bulk of the Torah Shebal Peh. All of the dinim that were developed based on the Midah Shatar and the Dreshes Bem. How do you read the Chumash? How do you read in between the lines of the Chumash to arrive at all of the various dinim? So that is clearly the bulk of the Torah Shebal Peh. So the dispute that the Chachamim had in the Gemara in Gittin, whether the Rov of the Torah, the majority of the Torah, is Bichsav Bal Peh, is regarding the status of laws that are derived through the Midah Shatar and the Dreshes Bem. Do you label that as Torah Shebichzav because you're reading in between the lines? You have the psukim. The psukim themselves are the Torah Shebichzav. That's clearly. It says you have to put on tefillin, you have to say krishma, and you have to eat matzah, and you have to listen to tkiyah shofar. That's Torah Shebichzav. But then we have, with grub and finger, we have rules and regulations how to read in between the lines, how to figure out additional dina. So when you're reading in between the lines, is that considered as if it's Torah Shebichzav? Or no, that's considered Torah Shebal Peh. And that is clearly the bulk of the Torah. Put in any library, put together the whole Torah, the majority of the bulk of the Torah is clearly all of the laws, what we call the laws of the Torah Shebal Peh, that are derived through the Midah Shatar and Adreshes. What's the difference? What's the difference whether you consider the laws that are derived by reading in between the lines, using the principles, using the Midah Shatar and Adreshes Bam of the Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel that appears in the Siddur, and the other Midas, what's the difference whether you label this with the status of Torah Shebichzav or you should label it with the status of Torah Shebal Peh? So that the Be'er... It seems that it has a lesser degree of something. What do you mean, a lesser degree of authenticity? It means it was developed in later generations by the rabbis, but it still had, the Torah Shebal Peh that was developed in the later generations still has the status of a Din Min HaTorah. So what's the difference whether it's a... We know that what we're reading in between the lines was developed, much of it was developed later, based on the principles that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And we know that it does have the status of a Din Min HaTorah. So what are they arguing about? What are they fighting about? We know that the principles were God-given, and the development was, there's human input over here. God wanted us to have human input. So what are they arguing about? We know it's slightly a lesser level. So what is the dispute? What's the difference, halacha lamaisa? The rabbis and the Talmud are not going to debate the point if it's irrelevant. There's no nafkamina, if it doesn't make a difference, lalacha. So there was a great Galatiana Goyen who wrote a sefer, Prima Godim, in the mid-1700s. Prima Godin was a Galatiana who happened to live in Frankfurt, the other Frankfurt, not Frankfurt on the main, the other Frankfurt. He was a Malamed. He taught little children Chumash in Haskalah Gemara. But he was one of the greatest Goyim in his generation and in all generations. And he wrote that Prima Godin is famous, the Sefer Prima Godin is a commentary, a stupid commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. Means on the regular Shulchan Aruch you have commentaries on the side. On Aruch Haim you have the Magen Avraham on one side and the Turi Zohar on the other side. And on Yerideh you have the Sifsei Kohen on one side and the Turi Zohar on the other side. So the Prima Godim is a commentary on these commentaries. Very famous. Prima Godim is very famous. So he has an introduction to his Sefer, Prima Godim, which appears in any regular big edition of Shulchan Aruch Aruch Haim in the first volume. Before you begin the Prima Godim, he has the Hakdamas HaMechaber. Again, this introduction... It's like the introduction of the Rambam to the Pirush HaMishnayis. It's not an introduction to the Pirush HaMishnayis. It's an introduction to the development of the Torah Shebal Peh. And like the Netziv's introduction to his commentary on the Shiltas, it's not really an introduction to his commentary or to the Shiltas, it's an introduction to the development, to the whole theme of the development of the Torah Shebal Peh. So the same is true regarding this Prima Godim's introduction. It's not really Hakdoma to his Sefer, it has nothing to do with his, has a little bit to do because he keeps on referring to what he wrote in his Sefer. But it's really an introduction to the entire Torah Shebal Peh. It's written in tiny little, printed in tiny little letters, like over here, and he has so much to say. He writes everything in a half a line, and he gives you references. I remember my father said, my father told me 40 years ago, somebody should get a doctoral dissertation for publishing the Hakdome, the introduction of the Prima Godin with annotations and with explanations. I don't think anybody got the doctoral dissertation yet, but at least 30 books were printed in Europe that I know of, without getting the doctoral dissertation, with giving you all the sources and the background and explaining what the Prima Godin has to say. And several books were just printed in the last 5 years in Eretz Yisrael. Two people independently published books with a text on the top of the page. The whole introduction of the Prima Godin is 10 pages. So these people took the introduction, they put it on the top of the page, and then there was enough for them to write on the bottom of the page comments on what he was talking about. So this is how he opens his introduction. He starts his discussion of the development of the Torah Shebal Peh with this passage in the Gemara in Gittin, where the Amoraim Lachachamim had a dispute whether the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebichsab and the majority of the Torah is Torah Shebal Peh. Quoting the comment of the Sefer Be'er Sheva that I mentioned before, the Be'er Sheva from the 1600s, who said that the dispute is, what is the status of the dinim that are learned out through the Midrash HaTorah and the Resh HaSbehem, when you're reading in between the lines, using the klolim, using the Midrash HaTorah and the Resh HaSbehem, whether these halachas have the status of Torah Shebichsab or Torah Shebal Peh? And then the Prima Godim discusses, so what's the big difference? What's the difference whether you give it this? We all know that it's the principles are God-given, but there's human input over here. We all know it has the status of a Din Menatar. So what's the difference whether you say it's labeled as Torah Shebichsab or it's labeled as a Torah Shebal Peh? So he gives you a whole dissertation, which we may quote from in future lectures, not today. So these are the first three sections of the Torah Shebal Peh in the listing of the Rambam. The Rambam has another two, a fourth and a fifth. We'll get to that a little later. Now, in discussing reading in between the lines, that is really the bulk of most of the Torah, is we have tradition how to read in between the lines to get additional halachas, and this is what we call the Midrash HaTorah and Resh HaSbehem. The question is always raised. We know there is a passage in the Talmud that Rashi quotes every so often in his commentary on Chumash, Ein HaMikra Yotze Midei Pshuto. The Pasuk in Chumash, the simple meaning of the words, that's what it is. So if the rabbis had a tradition, Ein HaMikra Yotze Midei Pshuto, so who gave them the right to read in between the lines? What is this all about, this Torah Shebal Peh? We should have thrown out this whole section. The whole third section of the Torah Shebal Peh shouldn't exist. We should have the first section, the Pirushim HaMakubalim L'Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, what do the words mean? That the word Priyei Tzadar means an esrog. That the word Zayin Tachasayin mean that you pay mum and it's a metaphor. These are metaphors and this is what it means. But this whole third section that you read in between the lines, which is the bulk, which is clearly the Rove, this is the majority of all of the Torah, are the dinim that are learned out through the Midrash HaTorah and Resh HaSbehem. How can you have such a thing if the rabbis of the Talmud state clearly that Ein HaMikra Yotze Midei Pshuto? So the Ramban, in his commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs, takes up this issue. Sefer HaMitzvahs is a book that was written by the Rambam to try to ascertain which are the 613 mitzvahs. Talmud says in the end of Gemara Makkos, the last page in Gemara Makkos, that we have a tradition that there are Taryag mitzvahs, 613 mitzvahs. But the Gemara never says, what is the listing? How did you cheshbin 613 mitzvahs? If you sit back and try to count how many mitzvahs, you will get millions and billions and trillions of mitzvahs. How do you get 613 mitzvahs? Every step of your life, there's another mitzvah. You have to do this, and you're not allowed to do that. There's so many obligations, there's so many restrictions, many more than 613. So the Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvahs, which is divided into two parts. Fascinating book to read. In some communities, they have a tradition that they learn Sefer HaMitzvahs all night on Shavuot. That's what Rabbi Cook, Chief Rabbi Cook, Zechanah Livracha, used to do. For many, many years, he used to give a shiur all night long in Sefer HaMitzvahs. In many communities, Rabbi David Cohen of Flatbush does that also. He says it's very successful. Many Rabbanim do that. Very interesting limud. Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs is divided into two parts. The first half of the Sefer HaMitzvos, he gives you what he considers are the 14 Sharashim, the 14 Klolim, the 14 rules and regulations. He picked the number 14. He thinks there are 14 guiding principles to determine what deserves to be counted as a mitzvah, what's not, and which mitzvah should be blended into one. Let's say there are so many prohibitions on Shabbos, but you only count it as one mitzvah, not to do malach on Shabbos. If you're going to count every single thing that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you already have 5 million dinim. 5 million things that you're not allowed to do min haTorah before you get to the dinim derabbanan. So the Rambam says, no, that only counts as one mitzvah. On Sukkot, on the first day Sukkot, how many karbonas do you bring? I think 29 karbonas or something. The Rambam says, no, you count it as one mitzvah to bring musafim, to bring all the musafim. You don't count every karbon as another mitzvah. So the Rambam, and then the Rambam tells you sometimes you have to count things as separate mitzvahs, not as one mitzvah. And he gives you what he worked out. He thinks that there are 14 rules. Okay. Some disagree with some of them, some agree. And then the second half of the Sefer HaMitzvahs is the actual count. Based on the 14 klolim that he postulated, then he gives you what he thinks is the correct cheshbon of the Taryak Mitzvahs, based on another passage that the Gemara has in another place, that the breakdown of the 613 mitzvahs is that you have Ramach Mitzvah Saseh, the 248 mitzvah Saseh, and Shin Samachay, that's 365 mitzvahs Loises. So the Rambam, keeping this cheshbon, keeping this number 248, has to figure out, juggle around, based on the klolim that he gave, which are the 248 mitzvahs Saseh, which are the 365 mitzvahs Loises. It's a fascinating sefer. So many who came before the Rambam was not the first who attempted to make a sefer on mitzvahs. The Rambam, in fact, keeps on disagreeing in his Sefer HaMitzvahs. He keeps on referring back to a Sefer, Halachas Gedolos, which was written in the period of the Gaonim, which was also an attempt to try to figure out which are the Taryag Mitzvahs, and he disagrees with some of the points of the Sefer, Halachas Gedolos, and the Rambam is, of course, not the last one to have what to say about this. So one of the famous Rishonim, one of the famous Gaonim of all times, who has what to say is the Ramban. The Ramban has a running commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvos LaHaRama, both on the first half and on the second half. On the first half, he has what to say, he has what to disagree, certain points on almost each one, not all, on almost each one of the 14 Sharashim, he has what to say. A lot of times he himself really disagrees with the Rambam, and a lot of times he's just defending the Gaonim who disagreed with the Rambam, but he personally really does agree with the Rambam. He tells you, I really think the Rambam is right, but he should not have left away those who disagree. He justifies that the Ramban does that very often. It's very often the theme in the Ramban. He's just justifying those who were attacked, but he himself really agrees with the attackers. His commentary on the bottom of the Rif is like that. He often justifies what the Rif, what the Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi writes, even though he himself doesn't agree with the Rif, but he felt hurt why Rabbi Nizrachi Halevi and the Sefer Hamor attacked the Rif so strongly, so he said, he shouldn't have attacked so much. The Rif's opinion makes sense. I happen to disagree with the Rif, but not so vehemently. So the Ramban, in his running commentary on the Sharoshim, in the first half of the Sefer HaMitzvos, so the Rambam develops the 14 rules and regulations to determine what qualifies as a mitzvah, what not. So the first of the Rambam Sharoshim is that you only count mitzvahs that are min haTorah. You're not going to include mitzvahs that are only in the Rabbanim in the listing of Taryag mitzvahs, because the expression used by the Gemara is Taryag mitzvahs nemru lo l'Moshe Nisina. Moshe Rabbeinu was given in Har Sinai 613 mitzvahs, so he wasn't given the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, he wasn't given the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. That was developed in a later generation. All the Takanos the Rabbanim were developed later. So if the rabbis of the Talmud had a tradition that Moshe Rabbeinu was given on Har Sinai nemru lo l'Moshe Nisina 613 mitzvahs, it doesn't make sense to include mitzvahs in the Rabbanan, and the Rambam is disagreeing with the position of the Halachas Gedolos, who was one of the Gaonim who preceded him, who does otherwise. He does include mitzvahs in the Rabbanan in his count. Okay, so the Ramban has what to say about that. He defends the opinion of the Baal Halachas Gedolos. Then the second of the Sharoshim, the Rambam postulates a very strange principle, which the Ramban is very upset about. You only include in the listing of the Minyan HaMitzvahs those mitzvahs that are Torah Shebichtav. You don't include those that are Torah Shebal Peh. So the Ramban says, and what's wrong with Torah Shebal Peh? But the Rambam doesn't believe that Torah Shebal Peh is Min HaShamayim. So the Ramban goes into a whole attack against the Rambam, and he goes on and on and on to defend the Torah Shebal Peh. It's a big problem exactly what does the Rambam talk about. Maybe we'll have to discuss it in a later lecture. So part of what the Ramban says in his, he gives a long presentation. It's interesting, it's very valuable, those who have time, to study just that Shoresh Sheni, to see in the second Shorish, in the 14 Shorashim that the Rambam has in the first half of the Sefer HaMitzvos, to read what the Rambam has to say, and to read the Ramban, which is utterly fascinating, what he has to say about the Torah Shebaal Peh. So part of what he has is this point, he raises this point. How are we reading in between the lines? And that's the bulk of the Torah, is the Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes, then the way we use the principles of developing the Torah Shebaal Peh by reading in between the lines. How can we do that? But the rabbis in the Talmud themselves said, Ein HaMikra Yoytze Midei Pshuta, that all you have in the Pasuk is the Pshuta Shal Mikra, the simple reading. So the Ramban says, if you study the Gemara, that's not what it says, that's a misquotation, that's a mistranslation. The passages in Gemara, Shabbos, and Daf Samach Gimel, where the Gemara tells the story of one of the Chachomim, Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana was an Amora, and he says he was 18 years old, and he was learning in the yeshiva. And he already knew a lot, he already knew how to learn very well, and he had never heard of that principle of Ein HaMikra Yoytze Midei Pshuta. And at the age of 18, that's when the Rebbe finally taught him this secret, that Ein HaMikra Yoytze Midei Pshuta. So the Ramban says, the rabbis of the Talmud never said Ein BaMikra Elo Pshuto, that the only thing that's emes in reading the Chumash is the simple translation of the words of the text. That's not true. They would never say that. We know that we have a Torah Shebaal Peh. We know that there are Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Ben. The rabbis in the Talmud said the following. We have many psukim where we have an interpretation how to read the pasuk. So the question is, once you have this interpretation, how to read in between the lines, so what about what it says in the text? Do we ignore that? Or do we say, no, we got a pasuk like the text also. We don't ignore the text. I'll give an example. It says in Parshas Mishpatim, if a person purchases, a father has a right to sell his daughter as an Amo Hevriya. How strange this. Father has a right to sell his daughter as an Amo Hevriya to another Jewish person, provided that she's younger than the age of 12, and when she reaches Bas Mitzvah, the age of 12, she goes free. So it says in the Chumash, Lo Seitze Kitseis Ho Avodim. She should not go out like the Avodim go out. How do you translate that post? So Rashi quotes the Gemara. In the yeshivas, they teach the students Chumash and Rashi, so everybody knows. Right away, Rashi says that there are certain yitzias. There's another pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim that says, if I have an Eved Knaini, and accidentally or on purpose, it doesn't make a difference, I knock out the Eved's tooth, or I blind the Eved, or I break off one of his fingers or something. So the Chumash says the Eved goes free. That's the principle. An Eved Knaini is Yotze, he goes free, B'shen V'ayin. The Chumash says, if I knocked out his tooth, a shen, or a nine, if I knocked out his eye. And the Halacha says, I knocked out any one of the Rashi Evan. Knocked off a finger, a toe, anything. He also goes free. So Rashi quotes from the rabbis of the Talmud, Lo Seitze, Ketse So Avodim, that if I bought an Amo Hevriya, and I accidentally or on purpose knocked out the girl's tooth, or blinded her, broke her finger, she does not go free like an Eved Kanaini goes free by Rosh Yivon. Rashi quotes from the rabbis of the Talmud that that's what the Pasuk says. That's what the Pasuk really means. Lo Seitze, Ketse So Avodim, that's such heavy artillery. Lo Yitzeitze, she doesn't have a Yitzia. Yitzia means a way of going free. Kitzeisa Avodim, like an Eved Kanaini goes free. So if you look in the Tur, in his commentary on Chumash, the Tur was written, the Tur is a Pirish on Chumash, written by the son of the Rosh. The Rosh was the end of the Balei HaTosfos. The Balei HaTosfos were for quite a while. The Rosh was towards the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos. He was a student of the Maharam Rutenberg. And whenever you have a question how to read the Tosfos, so what you do is you look in the back of the Gemara in the Sefer Rabbeinu Asher in the Rosh, he sums up what Tosfos says, and very often he explains it much better than the way it's printed on the page. So the Torah is the son of the Rosh. He wrote the whole Shulchan Aruch that we have is an abridged form of the Torah, written by the son of the Rosh. That's the Arbua Turim, or Echaim Yerodei Ebenezer Choshimishpot. And this same person, Rabbeinu Yankel Ben HaRosh, wrote also a commentary on Chumash. It's called the Pirish HaTur ala Torah. So the Torah says that what Rashi quoted from the Gemara, that's an additional level of interpretation. That's not the Pshuta Shal Mikra. What's the simple translation of the Pasuk? Lo Yitzeitze Ketse Savon. He says what it means is simple. If I have a male servant, I have a right to ask him to go travel to Brooklyn and to deliver a package for me, to go to the post office and pick up the mail, to go to do this. If I have a girl who's working for me as an Amo Hevriya, It's not derech eretz that I should send her out in the street. I should ask her to do things in the house. I should ask her to cook in the kitchen and to wash the laundry and to vacuum the rug or to shampoo the rug or whatever, to take care of the baby, to do things in the house. I have no right to ask her to go do things outside of the house because that's a violation of tzniyus with respect to the young girl. Lo tzeitzei ketzei sa'avod. Don't ask the girl to go do work outside of the house. So the Torah says that this is the pshuta shel mikra. So the question is, but the rabbis used heavy artillery here and they gave a different interpretation in the pasuk that means lo tzeitzei, the girl doesn't go free, ketzei sa'avod, like an eved kanani goes free. An eved kanani goes free if you knock out shem v'yayin. And a Jewish girl does not go free if you knock out her shem v'yayin. So once we have this interpretation, so what do we do with the pshuta shel mikra? So we throw it out in the garbage? The Rav Kana says in the Gemara and Shabbos, he's not speaking about this pasuk, he just says, till the age of 18, he was so used to learning all the drushes of the Chachamim, had to read in between the lines additional levels of interpretation in the psukim and chumash, he never realized that you're not allowed to ignore the pshuta shel mikra, that the simple translation of the pasuk is also a din. It's also binding. You cannot ignore, just because we have an additional level of interpretation, you cannot ignore the pshuta shel mikra. He said, Ein ha-mikra yoytze midei pshuto. You cannot ignore the pshuta shel mikra, but he never said, that's what the Ramban points out. Rav Kahana never said, Ein ha-mikra, elo pshuto. But the only thing that's true in the pasuk is the pshuta shel mikra. That's clearly not true. The whole Tarshish Alpeh is exactly this, that we're reading in between the lines in order to figure out additional halachas. But what he did say was, the pshuta shel mikra is also evidence. It's also true. But the drushes chachamim is also true. That's what he was learning till the age of 18. He never realized till 18 that the pshuta shel mikra is also true.
Left over, after you've taken off the grapes from the vine, that's the Yekin is the one thing. And the Golem is the threshing place. If you thresh out the kernels of grain, the kernels of grain are edible. That's the Tavo food. If you thresh out the kernels of grain, what's left is the straw, the sheep. So that's what you use to stop. So the rabbis of the Talmud have understood the whole pasuk differently. Still responsible for you should construct this different. You have to use stock that belongs to you. You should have done it after your 30 sticker that's no less than 7 days. And what should you make this stock from the us become the body from each other? From the leftover, you do the count out. It has to be something that needs to be down, which is total, which is detached. And it's not the type of food. You can't use the grapes and you can't use the turtles. You don't even have to use the branches that are left over, or the straw that's left over, the stuff that's not mycologum. Therefore, it's not the top of food. That's how the rabbis read the puzzle. How can they interpret the puzzle like that? The word God speaks that like a sword. What do you mean? You should construct what kind of an additional puzzle? See, you should let me give you a title to the puzzle. What do you mean? What is the word God speaks? The rabbis are trying to speak to you. The word God doesn't really mean something. The truth of the matter is it doesn't mean a holiday. The word God means a holiday in which you bring the carbon fagigas. The real word God means the carbon fagigas, which is a form of the carbon shlomo, which has to be worked without place of shlomo sugar. Everybody goes to the regular regular. The Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash, you're obligated to offer a carbon shlomim, that's called a carbon chagigah. We, biblical Hebrew, we refer to Pesach Shnei Sukkot as a chag, a holiday in which one brings a carbon chagigah. That's why in Shmini Atzeres, you may have realized that many people when they die, they don't say on our Shmini Chag or Atzeres like that, because that's the question. Shmini Atzeres, you're not obligated to bring another carbon chagigah. The many people say Shmini Atzeres HaChag HaZeh. Atzeres are chag of Sukkot. Sukkot is a chag. A lot of people will say, Yom HaShmini Atzeres HaZeh. They leave out the word chag. Because the word chag in biblical Hebrew, we say chag kuri. We say chag is chag ori. The holiday of the lights, chag ori. We celebrate from the yeshiva. We celebrate a chag of shrita. Every couple of years in Europe, in the Blina Rome, it happened in the Blina Yeshiva. We celebrate a chag of shrita. A few days ago, it's an invented term. It's a real chag of shrita. But this is in modern Hebrew. So we use the word chag to refer to any kind of a holiday, even Purim, Hanukkah, a celebration, chagigah celebration. But in biblical Hebrew, the real origin of the word chag means a carbon chagigah. And then as a Russian mushal, we refer to a holiday, Pesach Shmini, a holiday in which one brings a carbon chagigah, is referred to as a chag. So the rabbis of the Talmud say, you need the puzzle of this. Sukkah is passing on, you should construct the sukkah that should be 30 minutes and 7 days, and the stock should consist of the leftover gold, the yekid, and you remove the kernels of grain, which are edible, which is kalatuna. If you remove the grain, which are earthen, which are kalatuna, so the branches that are left over, and the hay, the straw that's left over, that's what you should use to make this stock. The wool doesn't make a difference where it's made from, but the stock has to have these three conditions. You do the karka, the kolosh, and the kolosh, and the kalatuna. So the question is, what happened to the word chag? The rabbis in the Talmud say, no, what the pasuk needs to say is, chag as sukkah is hyphenated, the sukkah has a kedusha like a carbon chagigah. But the sukkah is put to the mitzvah. You're not allowed, when you have a sukkah, you're not allowed to take off a piece of stock and use it for something else. Once you've dedicated the sukkah to the mitzvah of sukkah, and you've gathered the sukkah, I made a sukkah, I didn't sit in it yet, it's not a sukkah yet. I made a sukkah, and I fulfilled the mitzvah, I sat in the sukkah. For 5 minutes, and I fulfilled the mitzvah of Yeshiva the Sukkah. Then the Gemara says, "Kishen shachal shem shaman ala chagiga." Just like the Kodesh Chagiga has kedusha, so too ka, so too chal shem shaman ala Sukkah. So too the Sukkah is looked to the mitzvah. But that word chag of Sukkah is, doesn't mean the holiday. What it means is the Sukkah which is compared to a ka, a hyphenated phrase. Chag of Sukkah is the Sukkah which is like a Kodesh Chagiga. So the question is, after the rabbis have given this interpretation in the Pasuk, that we're writing a King James translation of the Bible, so how do we write? We write the way the rabbis translated the Pasuk. Of course not. The simple chant of the Pasuk means what it said originally. You should celebrate the holiday of Sukkot for the duration of 7 days, that the season of the year, the ingathering season of the year. This is an additional level of interpretation. So you say, hey, I'm Mikra Yosef, you don't throw out the original chant. The original chant is another Pasuk chant. That's what Unkelus's job is. Unkelus is supposed to give you the Pshutush and Mikro, leaving out all the additional levels of interpretation. Unkelus, when the Torah says creates Hadar, Unkelus doesn't like a good looking group. He says an extra. So the Pshutush and Mikro, that's not full personal. That's what the Pshat and the Pasuk is. When it says Mekomish Ayin Tachas Ayin, it says you pay money. So the Pirushim, the first category that the Rambam wrote, the five categories in the Torah Shabbat Peh, that's considered how the Rebbe is supposed to teach Pshat and Chumash. When the Rebbe teaches Chumash to young children, he does not begin the whole tradition of the whole Torah Shabbat Peh. He doesn't have to teach everything to little children. He has to teach what he's teaching. He has to give the translation of the book. So if he's going to say, Pia Tzada, he's going to teach the children again a good looking fruit. That's called the Gala Talamah Peh, Shalom Talamah Peh. The Rebbe is not doing a good job. He didn't translate the correct Pshat. You have to say what it says in Onkelos. Onkelos is considered Shukha Shalom. What about this pasuk, Kama Sukha Stasalah? The Rebbe does not have to tell this whole fancy additional level of interpretation. The Rebbe can translate the Shukha Shalom. Kama Sukha Stasalah. You celebrate the holiday Sukha for 7 days of being gathered in season. You don't have to tell the whole Torah Shabbat. There's not Shukha Shalom. And on the other pasuk, you'll say, if you say something, the Rebbe doesn't have to hack the children at Kabbalah. Rashi right away, that's not the Pshuta Shalmikro, that's an additional level of interpretation. The Rebbe has to just give Pshat like the Torah says. The Pasha Pshat, it states, if you say Salvadim, then if you have a Namah Hadri, a young girl who's younger than 12, you're not committed to ask you to go outside and do work in the street. It's not the Talmud, it's not proper. So this is what the Ramban points out. When the rabbis of the Talmud said, Ein HaMikri Reisem Yidei Pshuta, they never said an expression, Ein Ba Mikra El Pshuta. All there is in the Talmud is the Pshuta Shal Mikra. Of course it's not true. The bulk of the Torah Shema Peh, as we just quoted before, the bulk of the Torah Shema Peh is that part, that part of the Talmud where you're reading in between the lines, using the Midrash HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Yashasha, reading in between the lines to figure out what's over and above the Pshuta Shal Mikra. The rabbis always said, even though you have additional levels of interpretation in any given pasuk, you don't disregard the Pshuta Shal Mikra. The Pshuta Shal Mikra is a Gamkei Emes. And then if you actually take Pshuta, the Rambaran, that's also Emes. Just because you have an additional interpretation doesn't mean the Pshuta is to be rejected. You have to follow the Pshuta Shal Mikra as well. You have a contradiction, then you have a problem. Then you have a big problem. You have to work out the case. You have to discuss after which case it seems to contradict. One of the halakhas of Moshe Sinai that the Gemara does mention, the Rambam gives you a brief list, we mentioned before, of one column. So one of the dinim that the Gemara says is halakha Moshe Sinai is the din of Bola. This is the din of Kumash. If you smell the tree in Eretz Yisrael, it's the Bola of the Horus, and the Tatum called it Smata, and Parsha said, Lord, it's in the says that any tree that's planted in Eretz Yisrael, the fruits that grow the first 3 years may not be easy. The fruit very often is harder than it will grow. The first 3 years, not going to grow. But if you plant, let's say, bushes or the berries, if the fruits do grow, the fruits or the berries that grow on the tree of the bush, the bushes are also considered trees, are also bakim and also bakim. Now the Chumash only speaks of that orla in Eretz Yisrael. He said, boy, well, the orla, come to Eretz Yisrael, and the top and call it smart. What about all of the good slugs? A person has the samaha. He plants bushes, he plants trees, and the berries do grow the first 3 years. The Mishnah says in Kiddushin that although all the agricultural mitzvahs only apply to those slugs, tumas and mices and leopard sheep, curtail and sheep to the earth, there's so many mitzvahs that have to do with the parrot and all of those slugs. I mean, anything that has to be relevant to the farmers to know, all that is restricted to Eretz Yisrael. Nonetheless, the Mishnah does say that Orla, this thing, that the fruits that grow the first 3 years may not be eaten, this mitzvah applies even outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's called Orla, the good law. Orla outside of Eretz Yisrael. So the Talmud has a discussion, why should it be so? The Pasuk never said it. The Pasuk only says, he said, what do you want to order? How much more exclusive can you be? He said, what do you want to order? When he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and the Titan tells him, so the Chumash speaks about Orla in Eretz Yisrael. Where did the Mishnah get the din from? That the din of Orla even applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. The one suggestion in the Talmud is that there must be a din of the Rabbah. Can't be a din of the Rabbah. There's no source. There's no marker at all. Can't be the between them. The generally accepted opinion is the second view of that appeared in the Gemara Kedushin, that this is a halacha Moshe. This is halacha Moshe Kedushin, that it's a din of the Torah, which has no way of deriving it from the Sittim HaKumashim. You can't use any of the Midrash HaTorah between the lines of the further steps of the imagination. There's no way to derive this. This is a tradition from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, but there is a din of all of the different. The rabbis are familiar. But if you go to the store and you buy berries in New York City, New Jersey, whatever you live, and you buy berries and you buy fruits, how do you know whether those fruits grew on the tree the first 3 years or not? If the din of all the outside of that, it's only one of the din of all. Then you can bring the side relief. But we have a principle that the stuff that you have gone on is with you. Maybe you're not sure that it's something that's partially trade. The worst it can possibly be, even if it's trade, it's only trade, you're not gone on. We have a principle that the stuff that you have gone on is with you. You have a right to assume the best thing there. But if you have a subject, if you have a doubt regarding a biblical prohibition, an issue that you're bringing a brother, then you will believe that subject there, right? So, is with you. You have to assume the worst. So if one should assume that all of the outside of that stuff is only within a problem, so no problem. You go to the store, you buy the fruit, and you don't have to be worried about the fact. Maybe this is wrong, because even if it is wrong, that's only going to be an issue to that problem. So if the stuff is in that problem, so we're okay. But if you should assume the way it's generally accepted, the conclusion of the Gemara seems to be that all of the Kosovs is a din deraisa, but it's not from the Yiddish HaTorah of Yeshiv, then Halach of Moshe Nisim, but Halach of Moshe Nisim is also a din deraisa. So how come the Mishnah says that stuff is all of the good is with it? Because the Dima Nasara, we really want to say, stuff is the rice of the. So the Gemara answer is no, ta memra halacha. That's part of the package deal of the halacha of Moshe Nisim. That there is a din of all of the good and only if it's vadai, if there's any stuff in the Mishnah. That's part of the halacha of Moshe Nisim.
Are they halacha of the Moshe Nisim?
Pardon?
This satisfies every halakha of Moshe Nisim.
Oh, so that's the major dispute between the Rambam and the Rambam. So the Rambam said in the second Shorosh, the 14th Shorosh, that he's all, the first Shorosh says, we're not going to count mitzvahs to Rabbanon, because the Tarak mitzvahs were given to Moshe Rabbeinu HaSinai, the given to Rabbanon were given to HaSinai. Then he says, the second Shorosh, he says, I'm not even going to count mitzvahs that are deraisa, that were developed through the Torah Shabbat. So he's only going to count Torah Shabbat stuff. So the Rambam has this long attack from Shorosh Beis. Those who have time, it's a value to read the very long. Rambam has a lot to say. Yesterday he had this comment. I don't know. I don't think the Sefer Mitzvot is a good idea. Oh, yes, it is. Ah, okay, good. So you have to know the Rambam. Rambam has in the same place where he discussed the same long essay. He discusses the thing I need to look in the chief of the Rambam was 18 years old and so forth. In the same long essay, he picks on this Rambam. He says, what's the matter with the Rambam? Well, he thinks that all of halacha and emotion is seen on his own with the Rambam. But he calls it the goal of Kula. No, halacha and emotion is seen. He says that's not true. The Gemara only said it on Orla. Special being a local being only in Orla with the church. It's one package deal here. All of the good laws, the fruits that grow on the tree or the bushes the first 3 years after the status of all, even outside of that, so that's how Rabbi Moshe Nisim, that's an Issa in the Torah. And unlike every other Issa in the Torah that suffers, we're told that this one suffers from Kiddush. But the Gemara never meant to apply this rule to all Halakha Moshe Nisim. The Rambam is wrong. That's what the Rambam has. So the later commentaries here is, he made such an attack against the Rambam, where did the Rambam say this? The Rambam never said it worked. The Rambam just writes in the Sefer Mitzvahs in Shorosh Beis that he thinks he should only count for the minyan mitzvahs, those mitzvahs that are Torah Shabbat Tzav, and you should not include those that are Torah Shabbat Tzav. He didn't say that it's something called Halacha Moshe Nisim. How did the Rambam know to change such an attack? The other thing is attacking the Rambam, you understand. He says, what prompted the Rambam to say that you shouldn't include Torah Shabbat Tzav? What's a lower level? So he attacks him. It's not a lower level, the same level. That we understand what he's attacking. So where did he see anywhere in the Rambam's writings that the Rambam thinks that every Sotek Halacha Moshe Nisinai is Lukula? Where did he see that? So the latest, that's what they asked you. Where did the Rambam see this in the Rambam? So the latest story of that, we're interested in the fascinating statement. But no one is interested in reading it, but it's called Ara de la Halacha, by one of the Rambam's He's the one who points out where did the Ramban see in the Rambam that he thinks that every halacha of Moshe Mishnah is special of Kula. And he says, Captain, the Rambam is saying, the Rambam is innocent. Maybe the Rambam is innocent to Ramban. Regarding this point that you just raised, that the self of all of the Kutzmaras is in Kula is only regarding all of us and any halacha of Moshe Mishnah. So the Rambam is in Hilkos Mishnah, the Rambam says that it's written. The Mishnah says we have to end with this and we'll continue next. The Mishnah says in Mikvah, a mikveh has to have, anything that's covered by the total of the mikveh, so the mikveh has to have a minimum of 40 so'ot of water. It's a certain measure that is different. What if you have a sukkah? Somebody was total of a mikveh, somebody was total of a pot in a mikveh, and he's not sure whether the mikveh had 40 so'ot, or the mikveh didn't have 40 so'ot. So the Mishnah says that it's no good, the tefillah is no good, you have to be total again. Why? Because the requirement for 40 stores is a biblical requirement. But the Gemara says that 40 stores are a lot of Moshe Mishnah. That's not a possible problem. This is part of Shiurim. Shiurim are a lot of Moshe Mishnah. So the Mishnah says that Sukkot are a lot of Moshe Mishnah. I use the Kumar. That's the Mishnah. So the Ram quotes the Mishnah. If somebody was titled himself, somebody was titled Caleb in the Mikveh, and there's a Sukkot in the chapter of the Mikveh at 40 stores or not, the dealer is no good, but before then he has to justify the Mishnah. What does he have to justify? Say it's Halacha Moshe Mishnah, but you need our boy store. And Halacha Moshe Mishnah is a dealer in our store. And the Sukkot can not tell, okay? The Rambam stands on his head to justify. He says, well, this is a special kind of Halacha Moshe Mishnah. Because the institution of dealer and Mishnah is a positive function. So even though there's 40 stores, Halacha Moshe Mishnah, but this is coming to interpret the process, the way I treat it is if it were a custard, and that's why we have to go to it. So from that Ramban, you see that if it would have been any other halakha Moshe Mishnah, which is not coming to interpret what the ways of the custard mean, custard means you have to be covered with a mikvah. What's a mikvah? Body of water that's stagnant for it. Mikvah means covered with cotton. The water is staying still. So water is moving, that's not called a mikvah. That's the sense of how much water that doesn't say. So the halakha Moshe Mishnah tells you that the word mikvah means 40 cents. So one halakha Moshe Mishnah says that that's considered as if that mamash in the world is a pasuk. So the Rambam says that kind of halakha Moshe Mishnah you have to call a kumrah. So the Ramban, really he was talking about that. Ramban was picking on that Rambam. A lot of times the Ramban alludes to things and he doesn't tell you what he's alluding to. Apparently he's alluding to the statement by the Rambam. So the Rambam thinks that all halakhas of Moshe Mishnah, even though they're in the Torah, are treated like a dinner of bones. That whenever you have a suffix, you go to kumrah. But suffering, Halacha Moshe Mishnah would be the Kula. The suffering all of the good smells of Kula is not restricted only to oil. It applies to the whole category of Halacha Moshe Mishnah, except for those Halacha Moshe Mishnah that are coming to interpret a Torah. If it's a separate independent, like the 40 stores of Mishnah, if it's a separate Halacha Moshe Mishnah, then you would have the right to go with it. Okay, so now you're going to speak about the Kula.
I wasn't fast enough in coming in before the session.